Hello there. Today, we're going to talk about how to become a proper space wizard and go over how to manage your force. My name is Sean, and welcome to the Gamers Guild. All right, we're back. So I just want to go over today a couple things. Today, I have my guest here, Kenny. Kenny, how you doing?
Guest? That's all I am to you?
Oh, baby. You know you're more than that.
I'm doing well. How are you tonight?
I'm doing very well, actually. Just got done playing a game of Shatterpoint myself a couple hours ago.
Nice. Who'd you? What was your strike team?
The strike team was the typical like oops all droids list with Dooku and Asajj kind of leading the troops with Jango Fett in there as well.
Nice. That sounds pretty fun.
Oh, it was a blast. Went against a Mando's list, actually just straight core box. So both Mandalorians squads with Maul and Ahsoka.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a nail biter for sure. You literally came down to like last die roll. So
that's always fun. Yeah, I played a game Friday night with one of my buddies here in town, and I would have lost the game had like the struggle three objective tokens shifted to a different location, you know, like they got the priority objective, but it did not. So I was able to like last one more turn because he had his entire momentum tracker filled. And he moved the struggle token to zero. So I was like, if he had got one more point on that turn, I would have obviously lost.
Yeah.
But that did not happen. He only scored 2 points instead of three. So I was able to take a turn, ended up pulling Anakin, which is great when you want to help move the struggle token towards you and have Kalani just sitting there nice and ready to tap. And so I smacked him, moved it over one, and then scored the 2 points for the priority token. And or was it three? It was either two or three, but either way, like Anakin won me the game, and that one dice roll that he had also won me the game. I told him, I was like, if you roll anything other than the block, I lose. And he rolled the block. And I was like, great. I have a chance.
That's kind of how our game went too. Today, it literally came down to a die roll. His back point on the third struggle was the 2-pointer, and he had Gar, and he had an option of either reserving Gar with his last force point to go to his last flip, which he knew was Ahsoka, or save the force, and because Gar was not wounded or had an injured token at all, so he could use it to jump because he was kind of far out of the way, so he had to move then jump to get in position to try to beat my contestant with On Dooku. Ooh. And he did the attack. He had like three crits in his attack, but I had Exaxes like three expertise, two blocks. So I turned two of his three crits into failures. It was disgusting. So
that is mean.
It was very mean. Yeah, he needed to get me there. And if he did, he won hands down. But because I was able to cancel out those crits with Dooku, it just didn't happen for him.
Twice the pride, double the fall, man.
That's right. Speaking of, first thing first, on this episode, I would like to go over the Twice the Pride box, if you are down with that.
That sounds awesome to me.
Great. So, figure we kind of change things up. We're not going to do like a full-fledged review. We've kind of picked up from some of the audience, and full reviews can take up a lot of our episodes. Instead, we're just going to kind of do like a general quick layout, maybe go over a couple abilities here and there, just like state that they're a primary or secondary support, give like some general numbers, but instead of like breaking down stances and all that stuff, we're just going to go over like a general role and like things we like and dislike about the characters. What do you think, Kenny? Should we start from the bottom, go to the top? You want to start from the tippy top first?
I think we got to start with the man himself, Count Dooku.
I am good with that. All right, we have Count Dooku, Separatist leader. He's comes with squad points of 7, force of 4, stamina of 10 with durability 3. He's a primary unit type. He has the tags of Force User, Separatist Alliance, and Sith from the Clone Wars era. His abilities are very unique in the fact that he plays very well with Separatist Alliance in two separate ways, with Leader from the Separatist Army. Whenever he activates, he and one Separatist Alliance character within range 3 can dash. The other one is Brave But Foolish, as whenever once per turn, when an allied primary or secondary unit is wounded from an enemy effect, after it happens, you refresh 2 force, and then you can pick an allied supporting unit of Separatist Alliance, and they can either dash or make a 5-dice attack. In combat, he has some really neat abilities with Surely You Can Do Better, where he can actually, on the defensive, negate hits into failures for each 4 spent between 1 to 3. They have a rata disability, and that happens now during the modified dice step instead of at the start of the attack. So it actually got a bit of a buff. You don't have to guess anymore. Now you get to see the roll and then spend the force. And then his last one is Twice the Pride, Double the Fall. Of after a melee attack targeting an allied character within 2, he can use this if the attack contained no hit results. One character in this unit may dash and then make a 5-dice attack targeting the attacking character. So, Kenny, what do you think about that with his overall kit, with his abilities?
So, the thing I like most, not necessarily is his abilities. Like, his abilities are awesome, and I like how he plays with the supports, or like plays like the Separatist Alliance characters, and just has a passive refresh as you're playing the game. Like your opponent will do stuff and you will get that refresh. But my favorite thing about him is that he has 2 stances and they both have ranged attacks, because a lot of our primaries don't, except for Maul. Maul is the only other character who has a ranged attack. And so more primaries with range attacks is awesome, and his Force Lightning is just super, super cool in his Force Mastery form. Like that attack is a range. I don't know. It has lots of potential for damage with its expertise tree.
Yeah, he gets like 8 dice with range 4 on that Force Mastery side of that stance, and it is nasty. His expertise tree too, giving like 1 to 2 to 3 crits depending, is real gross. But yeah, he gets a whole lot of access of that. His other side too, is more of his melee-esque, which has a bit more dice on the melee side, but on the reduction of the ranged. However, he has one of the highest base defenses we've seen with 7.
Yeah, it's both of his forms are really freaking good. The thing I like probably least about him is, like, I know he generates potentially a decent amount of force throughout the game just off of his Brave But Foolish identity, but like Surely You Can Do Better and Twice the Pride, Double the Fall, like while those work together, like it can be pricey to do all that. Like, you know, spending 1 to 3 force and changing 1 hit to a failure per each force, like that's, you can burn through force so quickly doing that. And so you have to be super careful when you're using it, which is a great topic for this episode.
Absolutely.
And is very relatable.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. We'll be getting into that shortly, but yeah, I think things I like about this character, it's kind of a double-edged sword with me. I love the synergisticness he has with like Separatist Alliance characters and how he can, bank off of them. At the same time, from a design standpoint, I'm a bigger fan of characters that have like a little bit to do with like that support, you know, like that synergisticness, but like at the same time, like I don't want my characters to be overly so. And I think Dooku's like one ability too much, in my opinion, of like, okay, I gotta take Separatist Alliance characters with him, otherwise I'm just not gonna board him. He's not gonna see play.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. I mean, you at least have to take the secondary or like this the supporting units for like that dash or attack. But at that point, you might as well take the secondaries because they have a lot more of the synergistic abilities too. So,
indeed,
it's tricky.
It is. I mean, I will say too, like as more Clone Arrows stuff comes out, we will be getting a lot more Separatist Alliance characters and units within the game. So he'll have a plethora of allies to bring with him to do his thing for sure. But yeah, it makes it just to where like you really got to be bringing a lot of Separatist Alliance, maybe not all, but you want a good chunk with him to really flesh out that kit he has.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely do.
All right. From there, let's go ahead and move on down the list to Jango Fett. Kenny, if you don't mind, how about you take Jango and list off with his stat card?
Yeah. So Jango is a 4-point cost character. He's a secondary. Like every secondary we've seen so far, has 0 force that he offers. He has 9 stamina and 2 durability, and he is a bounty hunter, mercenary, scoundrel, and part of the Separatist Alliance. And he is from the Clone Wars era. He has a plethora of abilities, which I don't know if we need to read all of them, but there's some that go really cool that are hand in hand that I'd love to talk about. But I want to hear what you like about Jango first.
So Jango to me, he has my, I know Kalani is awesome and is super strong for a secondary. Jango has my pick for the strongest secondary we have playable right now. Every time I've seen him on board, he's just a threat. He puts in work. You usually just shove him down middle and then he can just capture wire people. He can like wait for activations to do not so fast. And both of those are great force usage. He's just has a wonderful kit. If my complaint is that he doesn't mesh with the Mandos, other than that, man, dude, he is gasoline. Like, mwah. I'm boarding Jango any chance I get.
Yeah, he's tons of fun. My favorite thing that I like about him is his not so fast ability. If you plant him next to someone who has like 1 or 2 health left before they get injured, you can just hold their activation entirely hostage. And
oh, yeah.
It's so mean. I had it happen to me on Friday night, and I did it to my brother a couple weekends ago when he was in town, and it was just hilarious. It's like, yeah, you can't activate Cody, or yeah, you're 212th. They're stuck right now. And you can't touch them because they'll activate and they will die.
And yeah.
And you'll be sad.
Yeah, 100%.
So really funny, especially when you can hold like a primary secondary hostage, because then you could potentially like refresh 2 force points and heal twice off of getting a primary or secondary with his I'm just looking to get paid. So another bad guy who gets to refresh force points. The thing I like least about him is while his expertise for his ranged attack is pretty good, like he doesn't do as much damage attacking as I would like, which makes up for it with not so fast. But like I'm always like, oh yeah, Jango's gonna go in and like wreck this dude, and then I'm just like, oh, this is sad. I'm so yeah. sad right now.
Yeah, his damage output just being at the very end of his track is something to note. He has a bit of damage like within, but yeah, like he really wants to hit like that fifth pip to like get all the way through if he can.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely want to get all the way through, but that's so freaking hard to do.
Yeah. Speaking of like the not so fast before we move on to the Magna Guard, I actually had that happen to me today in our game. We talked about my opponent activated the Clan Kryze, and I was like, we were about to like go through this turn. He was starting to talk some stuff out, and I was like, wait, if you're going to activate them, I'm going to do this. And he was like, oh, I'm going to. Okay. I spent the force. They had 2 health left, and I ripped 3 successes. And I was like, "Your activation's over. I'm sorry."
I warned you.
Yeah, it was pretty rough, man.
Funny.
It was a learning moment for them, for sure. It was great. Okay, so going from them, Let's go ahead and bust out the Magna Guard and see here. We got, they are worth 3 squad points for a supporting unit. They have 10 stamina, which I believe that is the highest stamina we've seen on a support, at least that is on release.
Yeah, so far.
So far. With 2 durability. They have the tags of Battle Droid, Droid, Separatist Alliance, and Trooper. They're also, of course, from the Clone Wars era. These guys are all about melee. They have no ranged. They also buff your characters within primaries and secondaries that are within range 2. They give them cover 1 no matter what. That's something that I think I've had a lot of people ask questions about, of like, oh, well, with the new updated cover rules of needing hunker, do the Magna Guard still work? And that is absolutely yes, they do still work, because those rules specify terrain cover specifically. So this is not that. And this is like the only form of like bodyguard that we really have in this game, of as long as they're within range 2 as well, that they can actually like take the hit for a primary unit.
Yeah.
See, with the, and or secondary with the intercede. And then an ability that I forgot about was their defensive protocols of if a primary moves, they can advance towards that primary character or allied, of course. But yeah, they're great.
I forget that every time I play them. I've played them 4 games probably, and every time I've never done it. Just, I'm always like, I look at it in the middle of the game or like the end of the game. It's like, I forgot to do this again. The thing I like most about them is they're basically like a mini Anakin in support form. They roll 6 attacks on their melees, and they just turn their expertise into crits, and their damage tree is pretty decent for a supporting unit. And you get, you know, you can get 2 attacks with them. So that's more potential for damage, because they are supporting units. The thing I like least is they have no range. So every other support in the game has range, at least at the moment, and they don't. So it can make them feel kind of lackluster, even though like they have so much else they offer on the table.
Yeah, my I definitely can agree with that. My things that I like about them is the fact that they have 2 shoves as like first and second pip. It is, and with that expertise tree that they have for their melee attacks, they're getting 1 to 2 shoves like every time they swing. I've not had an interaction with them yet, playing with or against them, that they have not shoved me at least once every time they've swung.
That's awesome.
Dude, they're crazy. They're crazy good. I'll also agree. Like I think the weakness of them is just they have no range. They have to get in. But as long as you and I remember our protection protocols, we'll get in more often.
Yeah, that's very true.
All right. Well, I think that's a good wrap up of the Twice the Pride box. Let's go ahead and move on to our main topic of force management. So we wanted to come here today to kind of go over like an overview of like the will of the force. You know, it's force in this game is used as like a resource mechanic. So let's go ahead and break that down. The things you can spend force on. And as of right now, with the only things that provide force are our primary units. And we've seen as little as 3 and as much as 4 per primary. So we can have as low as 6 in our pool, because you add both of them together for each one of your squads that make your strike team.
Mm-hmm.
So you have 6, then 7, or then 8. The only way to get 8 right now, I believe, is what, Anakin and Dooku. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right, because Luminar and Grievous are both 3s as well.
Right, and so is Obi-Wan, I do believe, right?
Yeah, and the Grand Inquisitor, who we saw this week.
That's right, we did see that too. So the most you can ever have is 8, and that's if you bring like Anakin and Dooku. But usually you're trucking in like 6 to 7, depending. Yeah. We also know that having... per injury/wound token on you It makes your ability makes a tax happen on your active and reactive abilities of an additional force when you use those. Even if it is a free ability, that tax still applies. But also remember that does not apply for like innate abilities. If you have an innate ability, that's still just going to happen.
Only like Anakin's deflect would cost one instead of being free if he were to be wounded and or injured.
Absolutely. Another thing to that you spend it on is reserving a character. So if you ever draw your card and you're like, okay, do I want to play this character now? I first turn, you're ripping Anakin Skywalker. Probably not the best play. So you want to spend a force, go ahead and put them in reserves. But it can later in the game, it can definitely make tricky situations where you're like, do I put this? Like, is there a Jango Fett within three of this character? I only have three health. Do I risk it for the biscuit and let them rip that dice? So it puts you in funny situations where, like, maybe you do, maybe you don't.
Yeah. It's real fun. I like how they did the mechanic and how it's not just 6, 7, 8 over just the course of the game. You get to refresh it after your order deck is complete. So you get 7 turns to go through it. And so if you're averaging maybe 1 per character per turn, you're probably pretty decent.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There's some that want more and there's some that don't need it. So,
yeah, that's something I'm very excited for with this game as well. Of just like that, the management of it all. So speaking of that, Kenny, what do you factor in when you want to spend force?
So the biggest thing I factor in is like, what is the game state? Like, do I need this character to do something really like powerful here? Like, I don't know, like Anakin, for instance, do I need him to take out this Count Dooku or this Asajj or whatever? So like, do I need to spend the 2 force for his I'm going to end this ability? So I want to look at the impact on game state. Does it score me a point? Does it wound or injure a character? Or does it get me maybe somewhere I need to be for positioning later in the game? So the biggest thing I factor in is, I mean, it's a game of points. Like, while it's fun to go in and just wreck face and try to get in position to do as many attacks as possible, like, you win the game by winning the struggles. And to win the struggles, you have to be contesting points. So how do I get the points in my favor? And when does that benefit me to spend the force? And it's the same with reserving. Like, if I have an activation struggle 2 or struggle 3 where I'm like, these guys are just sitting on a point that has no impact on the game right now. They can't even get close to one of the points. Like, they're in this corner. They need to get all the way across the map. Like, do I just need to reserve them so I can have a more impactful activation somewhere else? Those are the kinds of things that I'm factoring in when I am looking at using the force.
Absolutely. I don't think you could have said it much better than that, Kenny. Those are absolutely things I look at as well. I think that being able to lay out what you need in those right situations. So like early game, I think it's something we've all discussed too amongst ourselves is we've learned that the first few turns, it's really crucial in most situations to activate your supports. So I will be absolutely burning for reserve just to try to like fish for my supports as best I can in like the early game. Obviously if you're like freshly ripping them off, then you're good to go. No force needed. You got it. Outside of that, I value like movement mechanics, which a lot of our primaries have some form of movement mechanic. A lot of our secondaries do as well. But it's a force cost applies to the majority of those. So I think that movement mechanics like that are highly important in this game. This is definitely a game where like, unless you're like squatting on a point, you're wanting to try to get to like the next area you need to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. From there, like I'll usually value like damage dealing stuff a little bit less, but it really depends. It becomes more of a situational at that point, that once we start getting into like your combat abilities, where I feel like your movement ones, you're going to be spending more on like, okay, I need this now.
Yeah, I need to get from point A to point B.
Absolutely. So get kind of breaking that down too. So it's like a lot of early games, especially it'll be like reserving and movement abilities, especially early game, because it's kind of like somewhat similar to MCP of like taking your places, right? We need to get where we need to be to play the struggle and do the thing. Once you're kind of already there, it's a little bit easier to like not have to burn that force on those abilities.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So go ahead.
Yeah. In early game too, like you were mentioning the supports, like those times when you're using, what is it? The clones have defensive maneuvers. Like the 501st and the 212th both have defensive maneuvers. The Mandalorians all have like their jetpacks. When you're using those on your support units, that's now two characters who get that extra movement. So yeah. Like, cause it's per the entire unit. So early game, like I look to try and use the force on those characters as well, because it helps them get into position that much more easily.
Yeah, absolutely. So going from there, and kind of, I was kind of getting a little ahead of myself, but let's like actually do a right. So I think we should do like a breakdown. So like when we want to use force of like reserving, we've kind of mentioned the early game. Is there another time you really look at to like reserve a character outside of kind of what we mentioned with fishing for the supports early game?
Yeah. Sometimes middle, late game, like, you know, like, okay, like I don't have a character in reserve right now, and I am maybe 2/3 away through my activation deck. I have a support and both my primaries left, and I draw my support. Like, I'm reserving that support immediately because I know like I have more impactful characters that I need potentially to get into play or to do some big thing that my supports can't do. So it depends on what I'm looking to do. Like if I pull a support and it's like, I don't need them to go right now, they're sitting on this point, they're fine, I need like another character to have like that big turn somewhere else to swing the momentum in my favor, then yeah, I'm going to spend a force and reserve the card. Or if it's like, you know, my clones have like an injury and a wound on them right now, like they're going to die as soon as I activate them. Like I might let them activate, or I might just spend the force to get that activation somewhere else. It really just depends. I mean, that's why we're talking about it, because it depends on a whole bunch of things. The big thing again is just the impact on the board. Does this character at this moment do something for me that I need them to do to score me points to win the game?
Yeah, absolutely. I think with this game, it becomes a bit more like reactionary, right? So you're just kind of going with the ebb and flow of what the cards give you and your opponent. Mm-hmm. And so you have to decide amongst yourself, like that's when you can interject of like, okay, this is my moment to realize, okay, do I need this character now? Because if I do, great, we'll just go ahead and do the thing. But if I don't, okay, let's go ahead and use this force. Like, again, a very like minute, like restricted resource that we have. Like, you got to make sure it's like it worth it in the right situations. Otherwise, you might be having a character get removed from the table whenever they probably don't need to just yet. Maybe you have like a Kalani in the wings that could like use their, you know, move them and attack with them one more time before you have to activate them for their last go.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's also the aspect of reserving the Shatterpoint card. I don't think I've ever done it yet, because I've always found like I have some kind of impact that I can take, or that I can like, I can choose a character for the Shatterpoint card and like not worry about like, oh, like, am I doing the wrong thing? Like, I've never once had the thought like of reserving the Shatterpoint card and putting it back into my deck. Have you? Is that a thing you've done at all?
So funny you mentioned this. I've actually been brainstorming this like the past week. It's kind of like early to mid game. If I rip it off like first, second turn, I'm probably just going to use it on a support, get them into place to score points. Yeah. But if I'm like third, fourth turn in, and people are already kind of taking their places and capping points, and now I'm at that point, I'm less worried about doing a support. And now I'm like, okay, well, I want to make sure I'm doing like force users, or like at least one, or like looking for like that secondary into like my big hitters. And if I rip it like on like that second to third turn, I might actually spend that force to shuffle back in, so I can have a later, like a secondary, like a later force user activation that could be a bit more impactful.
Okay.
But that's about the only time I've really, that's really kind of come into play for me. But I'm sure as we kind of like play more and grow with this game, that very well may change.
Yeah, that's true. We I just feel like we don't have enough reason to do it yet. But I mean, I'd be very curious as to if people are doing it and having good success with it. So please hit me up if you have.
Absolutely. Me too. Don't keep those secrets to yourself, Kenny. All right. So moving on from that. I appreciate that. Moving on from that, let's go ahead and break it down to like the early game. So we've talked about reserving in a very well extensive area. So early game, not including reserving. Kenny, what do you look for like spending force on your characters?
Yeah. So usually, I mean, I mentioned this, I think, a little bit already. It's getting that movement to get people in position. Early game is all about positioning and trying to win struggle one, because struggle one really kind of gives you, I think, a leg up on struggles two and three. Maybe not struggle two, but at least struggle three, where you're able to choose like the scenario then. Like early game is all about that. So you want to put yourself in the best position to win that first struggle, and really to win any struggle. But that first one in particular, I think, is the biggest one in the game right now that you want to win. So you want to get in position, or it's like, if, I mean, I play a lot of Anakin. He is a drug to me. He is so much fun. So for me, it's like, okay, holding on to Anakin, if I pull him early, or like if I do have him activate, like I see a secondary or primary like within sight, and he just gets like big old like hard eyes or something, and he just races over, and he's ready to spend that force to take them out, to make them a lot more inefficient later in the game. Because you can, if you can hit one of those primaries or secondaries early, you can really have like a good impact on making them way more inefficient as the game goes on.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's kind of where I'm looking at it. And I'm sure like Maul is the same way, or any other like heavy hitter character who like actually wants to go in and just like slash someone in half with their lightsaber.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. I'm really big on that too. For me, like a lot of early game force expenditures is, as we kind of mentioned, kind of like beating the drum at this point, but like that movement, making sure you're getting people where they need to go, like that. Normally when we start going into like the mid game is when I'm looking for like, okay, now like people are usually in their places. Obviously movement's still always kind of a factor, because mid game we're looking like the later half of like struggle one, right? And kind of mm-hmm. That's by your experience as well. Struggle one being the longest, usually takes an hour-ish or so to get through at times.
Yeah.
So once you get in that mid-game, you're like four or so activations through. Then I'm looking for something like Anakin to really turn it up. I want to like flip him, awesome, burn. And that's when I'm like looking for a prime target and then just trying to dumpster him the best I can.
Yeah, and I have pretty bad force management, I'd say. I have 7 force to start my unit deck, and I'm like, oh, awesome, I don't have to worry about spending my force. And that kind of catches up to me mid game. Like, you know, we might still be in struggle one or like beginning of struggle two, and I'm like, you know, I don't have the force to do the cool stuff I want to do here. And so mid game, like I find myself being a lot more conservative with what I'm wanting to do. Like, cause we're maybe towards the end of like that, like first time through the activation deck, or, and so it's just, you know, trying to figure out like, okay, like I have these three characters left and I want to do like this thing with this character. I want this character to do this thing. and this character to do this thing, but I only have two force. Like, which ones are going to be the more important ones? And again, it's coming down to like, okay, what is the impact these are going to have at the moment right now? And so like mid game, like let's say it's like end of struggle one, early struggle two, to like give it a definition. I'm more inclined to like try and like keep like the pressure on my opponent by like potentially like getting characters injured if I need to. Because I, like I said with Anakin, like I find like making my opponent lose some of their efficiency with their characters can help me out in the long term. So I'm more inclined to use my force to like get me into position to score points, but second, like put pressure on my opponent to make them potentially make mistakes with their activations.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It, you like whenever you're ever able to do that as well, like now you're putting that pressure on them, as you're mentioning, you're wounding their characters, putting them in the injured status, and now you're taxing their force expenditures. And to me, that is big. I know early on, I had a few people wondering like, oh, you can't, it's really hard to remove models from the table, like KO models, if you will. Is attrition going to be good in this game? I don't think it is. And I disagree. I think because of this mechanic and making it to where, oh, if I wound you, now you're paying more force to do what you want or even like need to do. And so that is huge. I think it actually makes attrition pretty important in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it does. Like this is, attrition is like that weird kind of like stealthy good. Like you got the obvious, like, okay, control is good. Like it moves people off points. Easy to say is good, but attrition, because of like, just like that taxing impact that it has throughout the game, like it's annoying. Like suddenly like my clones can't coordinated fire for free anymore. Like I'd have to potentially spend a force if I want to drop a strain or drop a pend on someone. Like losing those super cheap abilities is really annoying. Or like Mandalorians, like now whenever they do their focus, they have to pay a power to do that extra jetpack. And it's like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah, it does. It does for sure. I felt that earlier this week whenever I was playing my Mando list, and my opponent like targeted out my squads early and wounded one of them like within like the fourth activation. The other one luckily lived for a little while, but like whenever I flipped my Shatterpoint card, I'm like, oh, this is a good opportunity to use them. And then I actually had to think twice because I was like, oh, well, now they're going to be injured. You know, they were wounded, now they're injured. It's going to cost me an additional force to even do Mandalorians or Stronger Together. And I can't afford it now. So there are situations where that's just very impactful.
Yeah, it is for sure.
Absolutely. So moving on, I guess, like kind of like wrapping up just like a step-by-step of early, mid, late game. So late game, we're kind of already touching base here with what we're looking at within a late game. Like at that point, you know, probably half your whole strike team's been wounded or at least injured at least once. The same thing with your opponent as well. Obviously, if the game is kind of averaging out, of course you have your outlier matches, but we won't get into that. Right. But yeah, no. So now people are wounded. Now people are injured. Now what are we doing with our force? Right. Let's say we just got another reshuffle. We've just regenerated. You're back at your six or seven stack. But now this is costing one where it normally was free. This is costing two when it normally was one. What are you trying to pinpoint in those moments?
I mean, we're getting into the later game, so like that's struggle two and three where you have a priority objective. And so trying to control that priority objective to get like that one sweet, sweet extra point for getting it. Like I'm looking at, can I get this with this character? if I can, then I'm going to do whatever I hopefully can to get that. If not, like, I'm going to try to just get the other points as well. Get whatever points I can, at that point. Cause it's everything, like all whatever plans, like, I mean, you've watched the Clone Wars enough to know, like, okay, like things have gone to crap. And now, like, we're like trying to like scramble, like we got plan A and that fell through and plan B fell through. So now we're on plan C. And plan C is where you're just doing whatever you can to survive and win the game. So that's where it's like, okay, like I don't really want to activate the 212th here, but I will. And they will, they might die because this is their last activation because they have two wounds, but I can go at least cap a point with them for a turn and like score some points and make use of like those characters. Like, they're on like their last hurrah. They still count for scoring at least like that last chance. So doing stuff like that, or I mean, maybe I'm not spending the force there to use their defensive maneuvers. Maybe not coordinated fire. Like it's hard. Cause like, you're just trying to make whatever impact you can on the game. Like if I have to spend the force, otherwise I lose, I'm going to spend that force. And indeed, I might feel very sad about it. Because yes. Spending two force for defensive maneuvers to get a hunker token only to die.
But you got to do what you got to do, right?
Yeah.
So I think if we've noticed, we've been talking to, you know, we talked about, you know, reserving. Obviously, reserving is never taxed. That's always just one. But, you know, we talked about the early game, the mid game, late game. There's a common theme here. It's all reactionary, right? You spend your force on what you need in the scenario that you're in. And I think that as long as you're able to identify what you need in that moment, you know what you should spend your force on. Ways to help with that are paying it. You can't obviously look at your, or through your unit deck. However, you can look in your discard pile. You can see who you've activated, who you have left. So being able to know your strike team, know what your what characters are capable of what, and seeing what you need in the right moments to know, okay, well, I just flipped, let's say like my B1 battle droids, right? Okay, I'm in a position where I need to push this character guaranteed off a point. My B1s are nowhere close, but I have a Saj Ventress over here. Well, let me go ahead and reserve them. Put them in reserve or on bottom with their ability. You're fishing for that at that point. So that's a point right there for using reserve. But let's say I rip my shadow point. Awesome. I get a Saj. She's wounded, she was wounded. She flips the injured. Now her push costs 3. And I only have 3 power left. But if it's a moment that I've got to do this to get them off and score this so I don't just lose on the spot, you do it.
Yeah, it's tricky.
It is 100%.
There is no matrix answer of do I do this, yes or no. Maybe bring a magic eight ball.
And right.
That can be your source of whether to use the force or not. Yeah, paying attention to the activation deck and what you've got going on. Because like, you might find yourself as like, oh, I have 2 characters left and 5 force. And I'm about to reshuffle my deck. So I might as well use this force and stop deliberating. Like, do I do it or not? And just do it because you're about to get all your force back anyway.
Yep, that's a great thing to point out too. Because every time you do that reshuffle, after you have flipped and activated that last character from it, as soon as you reshuffle, you regen your force and you don't go over what your pool is, your pool number is.
Can't have 17 force.
Right. Absolutely. So yeah, if you got it to burn, burn it all day, burn it. But if you don't, then, you know, obviously that's when you need to start pinpointing when you should and shouldn't do things. Another thing to mention too, is just like, when, like mentioning the Asajj deal, having 3, now you're in a point of like, well, do I like do I do that if they have an injured token or wounded token? Like, you know, it can definitely just be super taxing. And sometimes it might put you in a situation where it's not worth it. Like with Jango Fett that we mentioned earlier with his not so fast, you know, normally like, oh, awesome, I'm going to roll dice, do damage. But if a character has like 6 health and it's all of a sudden costing you 2 instead of 3 or 2 instead of 1 force, maybe it's not worth it doing it at that point anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I 100% agree.
So I guess moving on from that, how about ways to help mitigate within your roster building or anything like that to help mitigate with force? One thing I know we've been seeing a lot is a lot of dark side characters seem to have a lot more force regen abilities. Mm-hmm. We have Jango Fett. Anytime he wounds a secondary or primary, he regens too. Asajj Ventress has the same. Dooku has kind of an opposite, where if one of your primary or secondaries are wounded, they are like you gain 2 force from that, which is very interesting as well. Kenny, what about you? Do you have something else to add on to that outside of helping like mitigate?
Yeah. I mean, all the regenerating forces are awesome. The other thing to mitigate too is, and like this might not be mitigating your deck, but like mitigating your opponents. Like you, if you're paying attention to like their activations, and you see like, oh, like they have this healthy character who doesn't have any wounds or anything on him, and like he's coming up soon and he can have a pretty big impact on the board with the 3 force my opponent has, or like the 2 force or the 1 force or whatever, and like, you know, they might be saving it for that character. If you can get that character and wound them before they get that activation, they might be major sad.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
It's like they don't get to do the cool thing they got to do. Like, oh yeah, Jango's been holding my character hostage with his not so fast. So, and then my opponent only has 1 force left now. I'm going to go over and I'm going to smack him with Anakin or Maul or whoever and take care of that problem to free up one of my characters. So,
yes.
Like mitigating like your opponent's force abilities can help you. I mean, that's, I feel like next level. Like my brain is not at that level yet, but like that's where I'm like trying to like foresee myself getting with this game, is like messing with my opponent's activations and like their force management through like by paying attention to what they've got going on. But as far as like mitigating my own, because that was a completely like side tangent that I just thought about.
No, but I think it's still very relevant though, right?
Oh yeah. It is like mitigating my own. It's just, I mean, how am I building my teams? Like, am I building with a ton of characters who are force hungry? Like, you know, we got all these Jedi who have all these crazy cool abilities and they all cost a lot and they all want to do their things because they're really cool. Like you have Obi-Wan and Anakin, and you have both forms of Ahsoka that want to do stuff. You've got Barriss coming out soon, who like she spends force like nobody's business.
It's oh
like,
yeah.
How she, do you,
oh my God. Yeah.
How do you build like these teams that like that don't have that force replenishing metric? Do you like look for supports who don't need to use the force really? Do you just suck it up and be like, okay, like I need to be very choosy about how I'm using my force? Or like, do you throw in a character like Jango as a, like another secondary piece, like to go alongside Barriss and your 2 primaries to have him like as a cheap option to replenish force? Like how, like when I'm building my roster, like those are the questions I'm asking myself as far as like, okay, I have 7 force. Like how much force do I think I'm going to be using going through the order deck? Do I need ways to get force back later in the game to help me? And things like that. Like I'm also not building a list with 6 force. Which, if I'm building a list with six force, I'm going to be very sad because that sounds awful, personally.
So I think, I guess, like going into list building like that, and this is actually, that's perfect. That's actually kind of the thing that I was like wanting to talk about within this too, because I think it's the huge thing for like force mitigation like that, and like recognizing your list construction has everything to do with that too. You need to recognize like what you have, what, like who's spending what in these, like for your strike team. So no, going into that and seeing that and recognizing, okay, I only have six force to work with. I don't need to take a lot of units that are just super force hungry. I want my few that are going to burn through it. And then that's going to be about it in most situations.
Mm-hmm.
Going from that, I think you and I have kind of agreed with this in a bit here, at least, and correct me if I'm wrong, just from initial release, there are like kind of three main lists we've been seeing. And that's just like Dooku, Asajj with droids. We've seen, of course, like Anakin, Obi-Wan with clones. And mm-hmm. there's kind of a third outlier of just core box. That is, I've seen a lot of people use one of the primaries interchanging of either like Ahsoka or Asajj, but I usually see Ahsoka. And it's Ahsoka, Maul with the Mandos. And that list only has six force. However, I think they're able to mitigate it well enough because of Maul being able to take damage instead of spending force. So in that primary slot that's usually a heavy spender, they have this character that doesn't care as mm-hmm. much. And so they're kind of able to get away with it, right?
Yeah, Maul breaks the rules. But I mean, that's what characters do. Like, they do things that other characters can't do or that are against the rules. Like Obi-Wan breaking Hunker and stuff like that. So, yeah, Maul's damage to force ability is really cool. And like, that's another aspect. It's like with Maul, like, when do you decide to take the damage, or when do you decide to actually spend the force because you don't want to damage yourself? Like, there's that one aspect with Maul as well that's really fun.
Yeah, it's actually really cool too, because you can actually split it too. So like, you can be like, mm-hmm. okay, well, this is a two force cost here, so I'll spend one force, but I'll eat the damage for the other force.
Yeah.
To do that ability. And I think that's a really cool factor as well with that character.
It's like, oh, this is going to put me at four damage. I only need to be at three damage to get the extra dice, spend the force, and try and keep him alive.
Right. Yeah, I had my match today. Buddy was using Maul, and he just spent a single force just so he wouldn't kill himself to come at me, and put himself at 10 damage on him, and just like mashed into me.
living on the edge right there. Oh my gosh.
Yo, 100%, man. It was insane. So all right, I think we have a pretty good kind of wrap up on here. Outside of all this, like, do you have any like closing thoughts or anything like that on what we've kind of talked about today with force? We've kind of went over, it's very reactionary at this point. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything you wanted to add?
Yeah, I think the thing I want to add is, like, this could be a topic we revisit like every like 6 months or so as we get new releases. Like, there's new mechanics introduced to the game, new missions that might, who knows, like, have impacts on the force as well. So it's something that'll probably be, I mean, my mindset will be ever evolving for it. I think this is just where I've landed right now, but as things come and go, like, who knows where, what I'm going to value more. Like, right now I value that attrition more, but maybe there'll be a point where I think like, oh, Asajj's push is more valuable than Anakin's double tap ability. So it'll be cool to see like how my mindset shifts. And like, I don't know, I think it's fun seeing other people's opinions on it as well. Like, other people, I think, like we said, value that control more than we do. And I don't know, maybe we'll have like nine force strike teams. Like, maybe we'll get like a Palpatine who has like five force or something like that. Like, how will that impact the game? And like, what's, what are going to be the things like that we see as this mechanic evolves? And like, we get secondaries with force potentially, or supports. Like, they have it, they have the option there for a reason. I can't see them all being zero forever. Yeah. So like, how are those things going to impact like our strike building as well, and like the amount of force we have per game?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I'm definitely down for covering this topic like every so often as we get more releases, we get more characters that kind of influence what force can do and how much you can have, and just changes the aspect of this game. Again, we're just now scratching the surface, and it's just going to get crazier and crazier as time goes on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, all right. I think that wraps it up for the Force topic. We'll go on to some listener questions, but first, a word from our sponsors.
This podcast would absolutely not be possible if it wasn't for our sponsors, our friends at Tritex Games and GameChefs.org. If you're looking to buy some sweet, sweet tabletop fun in the U.S., head over to GameChefs.org and use the promo code GamersGuild for 15% off. And if you're in the EU, head over to Tritex Games and get 5% off their already deeply discounted goodies using the code TritexGGCP5. And if you have a local game store, keep supporting them. We are all for that. You can help support the podcast by joining the Gamers Guild Patreon for as little as $1 a month, or, wait for it, $12 a year. That's right, I can do math. Also, join us on our Discord and be a part of the Gamers Guild discussion for all things fun.
All right, and we're back here with some listener questions. First, we have one from Quincy. He says, so far, the dark side users, as in quotations, of course, seem to have a lot of ways to replenish force. Do you think this will end up being a massive advantage for those characters going forward, especially if you're running a lot of units that rely on their abilities that cost force points? Kenny, what do you think on that?
I don't think it's necessarily a massive advantage. I think AMG has done a good job designing this game to make things seem balanced. So like, while they get to do that cool thing and replenish their force, I mean, there's obviously like some very niche triggers that go along with it. So it's not just like, you know, like super easy to go and land. Like, Django's isn't easy to land. Asajj isn't easy to land. Grievous probably won't be easy to land. Dooku's is like the only one where it is easy to land because it relies on your opponent doing stuff. So, I mean, I think it's a pretty well-designed balancing, because like, while those characters replenish force, like a lot of like the Jedi and like the light side users, like they have abilities that do other things that are also really good and really impactful in their own way that like can make up for that difference in like losing that force or getting that force back.
Yeah. I am in mostly agreeance with you there. I think the only other one that I've was one of the characters you mentioned. I think Django is kind of somewhere in the middle on triggering his, in my experience, because again, it's because of Not So Fast. Mm-hmm. When he's attacking, yeah, we kind of talk about his damage like that, but yeah, no, dude, not so fast. I've seen he's usually triggering it at least once a game, but I mean, definitely still not as often as Dooku.
Yeah, I mean, but his is because he's a 4-cost secondary, like, and he fits well, like, he plays well pretty much everywhere. Like, he's not someone I really consider like a dark side user at right. the moment, because he's a secondary. And it's just easier to like fit him in elsewhere if you need him.
That is a very good point. That's a very good point. All right. But I will agree with that too. Yeah. I don't think it's a massive advantage. If they keep going that direction, sure. This is definitely a question I could see us like rounding about and looking at again. Mm-hmm. But knee jerk, seeing the launch of everything, it hasn't been massive. But I do think it is very strong. But as long as they make sure the light side users, if they're not going to give them that mechanic, have mechanics that can at least like benefit in other ways. Like I know we've seen a lot of healing and more defensive style mechanics with the light side. Obi-Wan's hunker, as we mentioned earlier, is a very good like mitigation ability that dark side doesn't really have access to. You also have Ahsoka's Fierce Protector heal, where she gets to make a full advance and then heal three or do an attack. Like, we haven't really seen that either. So you have other ways that they're trying to mitigate. Time will tell if it's if it stays being fair.
Yeah. All right. That's I don't think I have anything else to add to that. Like, it's everything's balanced and fair right now, in my eyes at least.
Indeed. All right. Next, we have Thoris is asking, what do we think of the event rules?
Yeah. So
yeah, I'll start us off on this one.
Yeah, here. Go for it. Sorry.
So going through, so funny enough, I've been doing a lot of research on the event rules over the past few days for one reason or another that will be revealed in the near future.
Indeed.
So I can't give a full opinion. I can only give like initial just eyeing it, give a thing. I'll have a better opinion whenever I actually run an event with these rules. But I agree with 2-hour time limits. I agree with having some sort of time mitigation to it. I kind of wish AMG would have embraced like maybe doing clocks, like a chess clock for events instead of the time mitigation they came up with, which is, if anyone has not read, is once there is 30 minutes left within an event that's going on, your Grand Arbiter or your TO, if you will, calls for Mission Critical. And when Mission Critical is called, starting with the player that is currently on the active turn, at the end of every single turn thereafter, they gain a momentum token. Every single turn. So
you're getting crazy.
That is, if you haven't really played many games of Shatterpoint yet, that is bonkers. It really can kind of skew just like what is being done, how like you're doing that, you're planning for your match. It can, if it was going the normal tempo, it, you know, like you may have had one game plan. When that Mission Critical gets called, that game plan may go out the window. It honestly, it affects the game that much, to where I don't know if I agree with it. But I will run it, of course, for my first few events and kind of like come back to it and see. Kenny, what do you think so far with that?
So yeah, the Mission Critical thing, I think is going to make games bananas. I want to try it before having a full opinion on it. Like, cause I think, it's easy to say like, oh, it's not great without playing it, like, but I can see why. Like, I don't know if I agree with it either. I think I like the idea of clocks more personally, but it is what it is. Like, it helps determine more so maybe a true winner than like maybe the feels bad of like, oh, like I had, like I ran out of clock time, which is like probably the most balanced and fair way to do things. It's just, I don't know, I've never played games with clocks before to like have like that kind of management that management skill, even though right. Like I play pretty fast anyway, so it's just I'm not sure, but there is one thing with the event rules that I loved, and that is the premier format, where you can bring 4 squads instead of 2 to an event, and when you go up to your games, you just pick 2, or like you pick your strike team out of the 4 squads, you pick 2, and you just have to play all four squads over the course of the event. Like, that's really freaking cool. I am so excited to have like that kind of flexibility in events. Lets me play more characters that I love playing, and it's cool like that it forces you to use all of the characters you're bringing. Like, I think that format is going to be the way of the future.
I highly agree. This was, I think we even may have mentioned that in a early episode of the cast when we were still waiting on like just base rules to drop. Mm-hmm. Where like I really hoped that they were going to add like a roster system to this game, and lo and behold, this is what we got. Second what you just said, I am insanely stoked that they actually did add that in. And I actually like the idea of having that you cannot escape your destiny rule of forcing you everyone to like at least one round throughout the whole event. They've had to have played every squad at least once. Mm-hmm. I actually think that is very clever. It prevents people from just like, well, here's my main strike team, and I just brought these two just to say I have a roster.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you have to play other stuff.
Right. I think the only thing I may have been a little more like keen on in a sense, but I understand why they didn't do it. And that was adding a ban system where like, oh, I get to look at your roster. I get to ban one squad and you get to ban one from mine. However, by doing that, you might break because of how we've synergisticness we like or the synergies we've seen with some of these strike teams. Like, if you just ban one squad, all of a sudden, like, well, that strike team's out. Like, you might as well have just banned the other one, too, because now, like, that just doesn't work. So I have to play this other strike team.
No bans is good, especially because if we're doing it the way where you have to play every squad, like, what if your squad gets banned every single game and you never can put them on the table?
Yeah, dude, it was such a feels bad, right? You brought your toys. You want to play with your toys. I mean, the game itself already influences that with how, like, wounding the injured mechanic works. So, like, don't just ban my squad every single round.
You don't want to play against Vader? Come on.
Yeah, man, come on. All right, so I think that's good for that. And then we got one from our very own Shadow Marvel.
Boo. What do you think?
Boo indeed, that guy. What do you think about struggle cards being the first tiebreaker over strength of schedule? Kenny, what about that?
I think it makes sense. This is a game where you're not like the reason I like strength of schedule, at least in like Marvel Crisis Protocol, over like points scored is because like the nature of the points in that game. Like, if you have like a massive like point differential, but like maybe you played two new players your first two rounds, like that can massively skew your like margin of victory. Whereas in this game, your margin of victory is, or like your victory tote like thing is just you win 2 points, or like you win 2 struggles, and like that's it. Like, there's no way to like game that in your favor. Like, there's 2 of 3, and if you win one and like that's it, but you still win the game, like it's one. Or if you lose one but you still, or you lost the game but you still won a struggle, like it still helps you out there. And especially with like the way the like with that like chaos, what is it called, like the 30 minute timer at the end,
mission critical.
Yeah, and with mission critical, like it's like strength of schedule in this game, like it, I don't know. I feel like it doesn't make as much sense just because of like the way like the RNG objectives work and all that fun stuff. I don't know. It makes sense to me.
Right. And I will agree with you too. In most situations, especially when you're looking at like top tables, it's not going to matter. SOS will be the deciding factor. Mm-hmm. In most situations, with the mission critical mechanic, you will potentially see situations where like you guys are on the third struggle and it goes to time. Like, that might happen.
Yep.
And that's why like mission critical is there though, to try to help that not happen, of course. But I mean, if you go to time in a with a mechanic in place that's influencing you not to go to time, but you still do, then having the other players that might be like 4-0, 4-0, next thing you know, like, well, this player has gotten two struggle cards every single game. So they have their 8 and you have 7 because this one game you went to time and you just happened to, you know, win via tiebreaker. Yeah. Then, yeah, I mean, I don't see a problem with that, but I can, I don't have a problem with that, but I can see people having a problem with it and I can kind of understand why, but yeah. I don't necessarily agree.
I wouldn't hate it either way. I'll say that. Like either right. way, like if it was strength of schedule over struggle cards, I'd be like, okay, that's fine. And if it was struggle cards over strength of schedule, like it is, I'm like, okay, that's fine.
Right. I think
it doesn't bother me either way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've seen people get upset just as much over strength of schedule in my life too. So it's as an event organizer myself, like it, you're going to deal with something either way. Like this is fine.
Yeah. It's just how it goes. No one will ever keep everyone happy.
Exactly. Now, again, my opinion might change down the road once I've run a few Shatterpoint events, and next thing I know, it's like, it's a nightmare. But yep. If anything with the rules of the event rules is going to be a nightmare, I just have a really big feeling that's not going to be the thing.
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, all right. That is it for our listener questions. Kenny, would you have anything else you want to say before we get on out of here?
Yeah, Anakin Skywalker is the best primary in the game.
Mm. Those are some strong, thoughtful words, sir. I will, I'll put my name on that. I'll agree. I'll agree for that for the time being.
Yes. All right. Suck it, Shadow Marvel. Actually, he's fine with it. It's Dizzard. Dizzard, suck it.
Oh, Dizzard, suck it? Okay, even better.
Suck he hates it, Anakin.
Does he? Oh,
yeah.
Poor guy.
I just, know. I'm sure he's missing out.
Probably just tired of losing to him, I'm sure. Well, all right. Well, Kenny, I appreciate you being here as a wonderful co-host. And yeah. Just like that, I'm going to go ahead and get on out of here. You have a good night. And everyone, always remember to keep on gaming.